Loving Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this day, for being with us, for giving us these topics, Lord, to stretch our minds and grow us in so many ways. And Lord, as we talk about the seed, we think of you as the Word of God who came to give us life. And we just ask that you would guide our talk today and our understanding, and that we can cooperate with you in your plan for gardening. In Jesus' name, amen.
God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night, shall not cease. I put this website on here. In my binder, if you want to look at it later, there's these plans for how to decide how many seeds you need to buy. There's charts for where to plant in your garden. It's just interesting. And she has these for free on the website. And I tried to get an easier link, and this is all I could come up with. So if you can write that down, I think it somehow didn't make it on the handout. Okay. Oh, sorry, too fast. My mind went to the next thing. So while you're writing that down, I just want to remind you, we're going to mention quite a bit of different pieces of equipment. Some of it's expensive, some of it's cheap. But gardening is not meant to be more expensive than buying food from the grocery store. And right now, you know, buying food from the grocery store costs you an arm and a leg. It is so expensive, and gets more expensive every time I go. So I just want to remind you that it doesn't have to be expensive. You don't have to own every single awesome piece of equipment, okay? We're going to mention what I use. She's going to mention what she uses. We don't both have the same things necessarily, and you don't have to have it all, but maybe they would work, something would work for you. Okay, so we want you to start small, and having a garden should save you money in the end.
Okay, choosing your seeds. What would you like to grow? You know, that's a good place to start. Make a list of what you'd like to grow. And during the long winter days, which right now in Texas, in January, it doesn't feel like winter, but at our house, it was cold, lots of snow. So when you have some time to look through those catalogs or look online and kind of get an idea, and there is so much. So if you kind of think of the categories of what you want to grow, then you can zone in on what variety you would like to grow of those things. Also, take note of your family's preferences. What do you like to eat? You know, if you don't like to eat Swiss chard, don't plant 20 feet of Swiss chard. But if you like green beans or you like carrots or tomatoes, start with those things. And then be willing to branch out. Like maybe you want to try one new thing or something every year. And then take note of how much you're able to plant, care for, and harvest successfully. Because this is not just starting and getting it in the garden. It's when the harvest comes on. How much, and believe me, when harvest comes on and you have berries and trees, and sometimes it gets overwhelming because everything needs attention. At least it seems that way. And then how much do you need? You know, are you wanting to just eat fresh out of the garden while it's garden season? Is that, you know, if that's what you want, then plant accordingly. If you're wanting to preserve food for the garden, from the garden for the winter, then you may want to plant a little more. Do you know how many canned green beans or frozen green beans you might want to use per week, you know, along with how much you might think you would use for summer eating? So kind of gauge that a little bit. And then, oh, this is actually your note, but to calculate one quart of green beans a week for 52 weeks. So That's a lot of green beans, Angie. Yeah, but yes.
We have a lot in our house, so I actually have to do more than that. Because one quart of green beans for 15 people doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. So, you know, plan per week, but then minus the amount that you would eat in the summer months, because you'll just be eating the fresh ones instead of the canned ones. So that is about 40 quarts of beans and peas and dill pickles, she says, and double or triple for tomatoes. So you do, what, 150 quarts of tomatoes?
150 to 200 quarts of tomatoes. And I do spaghetti sauce and ketchup and salsa. So those are all tomato-based.
How many pounds of tomatoes do you think
that takes? I carry them, but I don't weigh them.
Then be specific with your vegetable list. If you know you want to grow cucumbers, you know, grow cucumbers.
Okay. So we planned to get together back in Washington, but we actually live 3 or 4 hours apart. And it just never happened. We have both been exceedingly busy with our families. They put their roof, a new roof on and new windows in their house. And we have been building my mom and dad's house. And when you have to dig up tons of dahlias in the fall and can the tomatoes and go glean the peaches. And, you know, it's just, we never actually got together. So we've been working pretty well together, don't you think?
It's our first time doing it.
Yeah. okay, so I like to grow cucumbers. I grow about 5 different kinds, but maybe your family is used to the kind you get at Costco, the little long English cucumbers. You like that kind. That's what you know your family will eat. Maybe grow that and try one other one. I do them in the hoop house, so I have about 5 different kinds, and then I do picklers besides, because I do a lot of pickles. And they're a different kind of cucumber from the English ones for sure. They're not the same thing. I grow my slicing cucumbers in the greenhouse because it gets really hot where we are in the summer, and I can have a 50% shade cloth on my hoop house, which gives them a little bit longer life. So, another example of choosing varieties is tomatoes. I love tomatoes. I love to grow tomatoes. This is an example of what I've been doing for the last 15 years. I grow tomato plants and I sell them. When we moved to the new property, our neighbor's a nursery guy. So I've stopped advertising that I sell tomato plants because he does. But I have old customers, of course, that know where I live. And so I grow lots of different kinds of tomatoes. And I'm having a hard time cutting my list back, but slowly I've tried just about all of them. Actually, you can't exhaust the amount of types of tomatoes because they're always coming up with new ones. But there's some really good flavored heirlooms. The pineapple one that Lynn was talking about is fabulous. And you know, there's some hybrids that I really like as well. There's smooth ones, long keepers, there's paste tomatoes, there's plum size, there's cherry tomatoes, you know, the little round orange, what's it called, sugar something. Yeah, I forgot the name all of a sudden, but I grow it every year. Sun gold, that one. Yep. There's so many. And so you have to narrow it down. Narrow it down to what, you know. And if you get a packet and there's 25 seeds, but you're not going to grow 25 sun golds unless you're going to give them to all to your neighbors. So just grow 5 and 5 of the other kind and 2 of the other kind or whatever you think you're going to grow. So the seed will save till next year. It's really good to put it in something airtight, put it in your freezer, and it'll be fine. For choosing specific varieties for where you live, talk to the old timers. That's what I did. I went down the road. I knew this guy had beautiful tomatoes every year. I knocked on his door. And I had a really nice long conversation with him. He told me what varieties do best, how many days to maturity that worked best for him. He talked about when he started, and he talked about when the frost came. You know, all the things. And there's somebody in every neighborhood who can do that. So you just have to find. It's great. My mom was really good at that. We used to call the her little old man that she'd go find, you know. Mom's little old man has told her how to do this or that, you know. And you make friends that way in the neighborhood. But you can look at the catalog reviews online on the catalogs. There'll be reviews of different varieties, which is good. But another thing you can do is go to your county extension office. They'll tell you what grows best in your area.
And then there's something you may want to think about, and that is even among like heirloom varieties, which are, you know, been passed down, there are different things that will work better for you. Like, what's user friendly? You know, do you want like, for instance, you can get these purple potatoes, right? Is purple potatoes how you want to eat your mashed potatoes? You know, so think about what's user friendly for you. And also with that, I want to talk just a little bit about like the kinds of tomatoes. So most of you are probably familiar with, I mean, there's the cherry tomatoes. Those are like lunch type tomatoes. Then you have slicers. Those are good for sandwiches. They can be canned, but they tend to be watery. If you're wanting sauce tomatoes, then you want to go to a Roma or a paste tomato or something that's a sauce and slice. And then, like when we think about corn, you know, there's some kinds of corn that doesn't make a good corn on the cob. So you want sweet corn if you want corn on the cob. If you want to make cornmeal, then you're going to want to use, okay, this is a kind of a new term to me, but flint or dent corn. Popcorn makes good cornmeal. So you want to be discerning a little bit about what you're trying to plant and why. Another good example is beets. You know, you can get the round beets or even the cylindrical beets. But if you think you want to plant sugar beets, just know that you're going to end up with a very large beet that's very sweet, but fairly tough because it's grown for sugar. It's grown for animal feed. And so discern some of those aspects when you're ordering your seeds. Bush beans and pole beans. Where do you want to pick your beans? Do you want to be down here picking your beans, or do you want to pick it on a trellis? And do you have room and a way to make a trellis? So what else? Some kinds of beans, snap beans, are usually good for freezing or canning. But then you also have beans that are like for dry storage. So you can eat the pod when it's tender, but you'll want to know that, oh, these are the ones that go in the that are dried, and they go in the jar, and you cook them into pinto beans or whatever. So lettuce comes in head, romaine, and leaf varieties. Are you going to try and grow head lettuce, or would you rather have that young, tender baby salad? Peas can be for shell peas, and you mentioned this. You had two varieties that...
Sugar snaps for eating. You eat the whole pod and peas and all. And then the other variety where you take the peas out and cook them.
Okay. Peppers come in sweet and hot varieties. So, you know, what do you want to grow? Cucumbers, you have slicing cucumbers and you have pickling cucumbers. Pickling cucumbers tend to be a little more tough in the skin and the ends can be bitter, but they pickle great. So... I think I've just about, potatoes, there's different ones. Some are boilers, some are bakers, that sort of thing. Okay, yeah, so another thing you want to think about is days to maturity. So when you're that will coincide with your days to grow from your first to your last frost date. Did we cover that already? I think we're coming up on that again. But you're going to want to know how long does it take for this crop to mature? And like with tomatoes, you do start them in the house, but it will take so many days. So like, for instance, When I was in Northern California, our elevation was 2,300 feet. We were north of Sacramento. And I could grow tomatoes that took 110 days, and they could get big because our season was that long. But now I'm at 2,900, 3,000 feet. And so a 75-day or an 85-day tomato ripen better because sometimes the fall comes sooner, sometimes later. So just kind of depends from year to year. And I often have tomatoes finishing ripe. Angie asked me, when do you start picking tomatoes? I was like, maybe August, September. So sometimes we get the smaller ones on. But this year, I actually canned the last, right? Is that on that slide? I canned the last of our tomatoes December 5. Now, I had held them for a while, and they didn't get fully as red because a lot of them I had picked green before the frost. But that just kind of tells you the spectrum you might end up working with.
It's interesting that we're in the same, I'm a 6B zone, she's in a 6B zone, and we pick tomatoes in July. End of July, but still we're picking tomatoes sooner than her. And I'm not sure if it's because her season starts a little later or if because I have a hoop house, we're able to get them going a little sooner. Although I do plant them outdoors, so. Okay.
Yeah, that could be. And I'm going to actually think about putting in a low hoop over my tomatoes because sometimes I can get them in the end of May, but usually I have to wait till June 10, which is a little late.
That's a whole month later than I get mine in.
Yeah. Now, you can also think about your schedule. So when I plant green beans, if we're planning an August vacation, I will say, okay, they take 8 weeks pretty much to come on when you're going to first pick them. So I'll be like, okay, we're on vacation here, so I don't want to pick them till I get back, start picking. You know, so you can kind of plan a little bit based on the days it takes those seeds to mature and how you want to work it in your season.
Okay, we're going to talk about different kinds of seeds, and the pictures don't necessarily go with this. These are not GMO seeds. You cannot buy GMO seeds in the catalog. Just be, you know, aware that you don't have to go searching through the catalog. Oh, this, can I buy a GMO seed? Is that actually a thing? You're not going to be able to get a hold of those. Those are for the big farmers, and you don't want them. So, genetically modified is blending two species. GMO corn is corn blended with a bacteria that kills worms. And so it's not something we actually want to eat. It's playing with nature. This is 3 years ago. Those are my girls. Well, actually, one is my niece and one is my daughter. And we were having a lot of fun that year, because this greenhouse was our neighbor's. It was just down the road. It was a marijuana grow-op that it became illegal for them to use for marijuana growing, so he rented it to me, which was perfect because it was a heated floor. It had all the bells and whistles, and he barely charged me anything. We had so much fun, and we had so many plants. Okay. Yeah. this is an example of a home garden right here.
So I took these cells here are from the 200 cell flat. The market gardeners are using those, where they're just a very small. I cut the flat up so that I have 20 little holes in each one, because when I want to do my succession plantings, I don't want 200 and I don't want to mess with a full thing, so I'm trying this. So a hybrid seed is a cross between two or more varieties of the same species. A golden retriever plus a poodle is a golden doodle. And there's nothing wrong with hybrid seeds, but if you want to save the seeds from your own crops, while the seeds will be viable, they will not be true to type. So you're not going to be like, oh, I just love this tomato, I want to do this again. Well, they have to cross the parent crops to get that each time. So
if you plant that seed, you will get a nice tomato probably, but it won't be the one you had last year. It'll revert back to one of the parents, and you don't know which one.
So you can use them. If you were in a pinch, you could do that.
Mm-hmm. So. They have been bred for vigor, disease resistance, and one of those reasons may be, one of those reasons may be for your reason of choosing the hybrid. So why you would enjoy using it or its features.
I like a tomato that doesn't have wrinkles. I want, when I am peeling it or if I'm cutting it for my sandwich, I don't want all the crinkles. And that's very typical in an heirloom. So sometimes I grow a tomato that doesn't have the deep grooves because what happens is you can have these little cracks and stuff. And when I'm selling a tomato, the people are coming, they want a perfect tomato. They don't want one that has open cracks, you know. So, open pollinated seeds are non-hybrid seeds. These produce true to type, so you can save their seeds from year to year. If you want more information on seed saving, there's three books I can recommend. Seed to Seed, The Seed Garden, and The Heirloom Life Gardener. Heirloom Life Gardener is Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds. Everything in their catalog is an open pollinated seed. So you can plant those in your garden, you can save the seed, and you can grow them again next year. The only thing is sometimes there's cross-pollination, and then you won't have exactly the same. Just depending on what you're doing.
If you're really into botany, you might like the Seed to Seed because it's very detailed and it uses all the scientific names. If that's more cumbersome for you like it is for me, the Seed Garden and the Heirloom Life Gardener were much more user-friendly for me. Okay. Heirloom seeds are open pollinated that have a history and have been around a long time, usually at least 50 to 100 years. So there's going to be a lot of authenticity with those kinds of seeds. And organic seed are from plants that were grown on certified organic land. They were grown and harvested with organic practices and should not be affected by commercial pesticides, fertilizers, or herbicides.
So that's typically what you would be looking for.
And the seed that works best for you is the one that achieves your goals.
Where to buy your seed? We gave on the handout a long list of really good catalogs. I only use about three of them myself. I use Johnny Selected Seeds, Baker Creek, and the Maine Potato Lady. The rest I may have ordered maybe once or twice or whatever, but it's not... How do I say this? Don't buy from every catalog. Choose a couple. Get your favorites. You can save on shipping when they have a, you know, buy so many seeds and they'll give you free shipping. If you're buying from every catalog, you're going to end up paying so much in shipping, it's not worth it. So just choose a catalog that seems to have what you're looking for. And Johnny Selected, the market growers use it. I use it because we do a lot of things. But I also buy from a couple of farm catalogs that you wouldn't probably use just because I can do that. But so the Safe Seeds Pledge is in the catalog. If it has that, you know there's no contamination of different things.
Yeah, I was just going to say on this list that's in the handout, point out there's a couple of resources there. We're not doing a track here on berries and orchard, but Burnt Ridge Nursery is a very good resource for fruits and nuts and berries. Indiana Berry also for berries. And I don't know if any of you ever order from Azure Standard, but if... Oh, do we have that? I don't know if we have that up here. Yes. If you happen to be able to order from Azure Standard. In the spring, they have a garden supply, not just seeds, but starts. And you can order nice, their starts are really good. They're quality. They're organic. You have to be sure and pick your order up on time. They don't freeze or something overnight, but they have very good starts.
So all of these catalogs are in the handout. You don't have to copy all of them. Of course, I didn't. Okay. So you can get seeds at the big box store. You can go to Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, buy seeds. The problem is they get the leftover seed. It isn't the same quality. The germination rate is lower. And yes, I do pick up a packet here and there. Oh, I just need a little bit of parsley, or, you know, I need another packet of zucchini seed because something happened to my zucchini, whatever. I might grab a packet of seed. But if you're really serious about your garden, you're probably not going to buy your seed from the big box store. Order your seeds early. I've already ordered my seeds. If you wait very long, they're out, and you'll be put on back order, and you'll start getting seeds in July or something. It just doesn't work very well. Although last summer, I ordered our favorite melon. It's the Lily Crenshaw, and they were back ordered. And I said, oh, no, I'll find it somewhere else. I couldn't find it anywhere else. And so I finally ordered it in June, and I planted it, and we still ate more melons than you can handle. So sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. Johnny's selected seed. It's Lily Crenshaw. Yes. How long do your seeds usually save? That is a very good question, and it depends on your seed. Carrot seeds, you might get 2 years if you're lucky. Tomato seeds, you'll get a few years out of them. Pepper seeds, I had a packet of pimento seeds. It was my favorite, and I can't find it anywhere else. It was huge. It lasted me 10 years, and I was growing 30 of them every year. Finally, at I think it was 12 years, I couldn't get them to germinate anymore, so I had to throw it away. So I'm not very good about this. I tell you one thing and I do another. Airtight container in the freezer, but my freezer is full. My freezers are full, all three of them, and four of them. And so I put them in our shed because it's cool in there, and that's where I'm storing the dahlia tubers. So they're in a container with a plastic lid, and each type is in a Ziploc, labeled in alphabetical order. It's kind of fun. I've never done it. Can you put oxygen absorbers? I don't know.
Actually, I was listening to Bob Gregory, and he said, no, don't use a vacuum pack or something to store your seed because seeds are living. They need a little bit of oxygen. So just zip them in those bags. And he recommended double bagging them. So either in a bag in another air container or two bags.
I have heated floors in my house. And last year, I didn't think about it, but I had some seed in the bottom drawer. It was warm in there. It really was detrimental to my seed, but that's okay. Okay, how much to plant? I do have a chart in my folder if you want to look at that later, but I found some suggested lists. For a family of four. Oh, maybe it's on here. Let me see. Oh, this is checking old seed. She has...
I was going through my seed. I didn't know what was still good. And so I put them out on paper towels.
I put them out on paper towels, wrote their name there on scotch tape, and just kept them misted and by the fire until they sprouted, and then I knew which I could count the germination rate, which ones were still good and which ones I should just toss.
Okay, now get them done. Yeah, December, January is when I order because they start running out, especially of the really special things. So, yeah, I wanted you to see this. Do you see how stocky the tomato is? It is a patio tomato, so it's it leans towards being a very stocky, short tomato. But when you're growing your tomatoes under a light, you're looking for girth, not height, on the stem. You want a nice, fat stem. And we'll talk about how that happens. Okay, this I thought it was on here, but it's not. Beets. For a family of four, 20 to 30 foot long row. Bell peppers, 10 to 15 plants. Broccoli, 12 to 15 plants. Carrots, 12 to 16 feet long. Corn, you're going to need about 50 plants in a block. You don't... This, for some reason, I'm not sure. You want to look in the handout? It is in the handout. Okay, great. Okay, very good. Cucumbers, 4 to 6 plants, or 2 to 4 vining ones. Eggplant, 6 to 8 plants. Kale, 15 to 20 foot long row. But then if you're doing the green drink that Dr. Emerson is talking about, you're going to increase that. Lettuce, 20 to 30 foot row. Unless you guys don't eat salad, then you make it shorter. Melons, 4 to 6 plants. I think I probably had those Crenshaws. I probably had 8 plants for our 15 people, and we didn't eat them all. It's just too many. Potatoes, 40 to 50 plants. Spinach, a 30 to 40 foot long row. I'm sure that's not single. I hope it's not a single row. Squash, 4 to 6 plants. Tomatoes, 15 to 20. That's more than most people plant, I would think. Tomatoes, a lot of people have 5 or 6 tomato plants. I have a 200, so, you know, just depends. How many do you do?
Anywhere from 30 to 1 year, I think we did 140.
Yeah. Zucchini, 4 to 8 plants. That's a lot of zucchini, too. That's a lot. Some charts vary. I have the book, The Family Garden Plan by Melissa Norris, and that's the first link I gave you earlier today. And she has a lot of charts in her book, and you can find them online as well. So we are at seeds starting indoors. We're going to have a soil blocking class. It's lesson 7. I'm not sure what time that is, but we will be doing that later. You're not going to want to do your cucumbers and sunflowers or melons in little soil blocks. You're going to do them in containers. The big seeds, when they open up, they crack up the soil a little bit more. They can make your pot fall over if it's not big enough. So unless you have the really big soil blocker, they probably is not the best thing. It's better to use a pony pack or a little pot container. Just make sure there's a little hole in the bottom if you're using like an old cottage cheese container. Growing your own seeds opens up a world of variety. Seeds are plentiful, but if you go buy plants, you're limited to whatever the nursery has. So that's why we plant from seed.
Seed starting mediums. It's easiest to pick up a pack of bags. Let me try that again. Bags of potting mix from the hardware, the nursery store. But you're looking specifically for potting mix, not garden soil or raised bed mix or anything else. Look for the organic potting mix for your seedlings. Organic Miracle-Gro is common, and you can get it from Costco in the spring for the best price. There are other brands, but you will not find that all are created equal. You had experience, I guess, with Costco that was...
They got a different kind of soil in. They've been getting this Organic Miracle-Gro forever, and then all of a sudden they switched to a different brand, and I didn't think about it. Smelled like manure. Nothing grew in it. The seeds just rotted. And I thought, what am I doing wrong? There's something about this soil. It just doesn't smell right. Well, everybody was complaining. Can't get my garden to grow. I can't get my seeds to start. So yeah, it does make a difference. And one other story I have is I was growing tomato plants for the hardware store in town, and he wanted me to use the soil he sold, black gold. I didn't think about it. My plants got this high, they turned purple, then they got yellow, and I would pull them up and there was no roots. What in the world? Then I started looking at the bag of soil. It was hot. It was burning all those roots. There was too much, there was fertilizers and stuff in it. You don't need that. For a seedling has everything it needs in itself. You don't need to put anything in the soil until they're about this big or even this big. Then you might amend it with a little fish fertilizer or something, but not before. It'll just ruin the roots because they don't need it.
Oh, one tip. When you're working with potting soil, wear gloves because it does often have little slivers from, I mean, there's wood that they end up putting in there too. So just save yourself some time.
You will have prickers in your skin that you can't see for days. And so I never put gloves on because I never think about it. And afterwards, I always regret it. I mean, it's just such a problem for your skin.
So filling the trays and pots. Now, this is actually my first introduction to soil blocking. So, but I understand the concept. So tomorrow will be fun. But one of the downsides to using self-propagation trees for your seedlings, these flats, is that you have to store them. So if space is an issue for you, you know, these trays can stack up and add up. So you may lean towards soil blocking, and you've had that experience. But the roots of the plant in the soil blocks, I'm sorry, roots of the plant in the cells, as they get bigger, they will tend to go around and around and around. And, you know, when we look at a tree, the branches go up and out like this, right? That's what the roots need to do. So they can be in smaller, like this is actually a 200 cell, and those are okay for very small starts. But once those roots start coming out, they either need to be planted or be transplanted into a bigger pot where they can finish developing their roots, especially if you can't set them out because it's too cold.
Cell trays are not a bad choice if that's what you have. If you don't have a soil blocker, it's okay. But the soil blocker, the roots will self-prune and they won't go around and around. The air, when they touch the sides of the block, they stop growing because they get the air and they're like, oh, there's nothing here. So that's why we use soil blocks. It's healthier. It's quicker. You don't have to harden them as long. So that's amazing.
This is actually a picture of a lot of our cells. And you can see there on the wheelbarrow, for years, all I did was save the flower pots, you know, and get some trays underneath. And you can start very simple. You don't have to go expensive. So I think we had a question. Can we? Soil blocker.
We're gonna show you that tomorrow. It's a metal thing. You push into the dirt, and then you push the handle down, and it drops out the little soil blocks. And I'll go back here a little. This is my son-in-law. He's making soil blocks right here. And we had run out of trays. This greenhouse was full to the brim, and we'd run out of trays, so we were now just putting soil blocks on wood. Okay. We're going to do that tomorrow. Okay, make sure you label everything. I can't stress that enough, especially if you're going to sell anything. If you're going to give your neighbor 5 tomato plants, make sure they're not something else, okay? I have had the experience. You see how I have all those labels for different rows? That's my saving space, you know, when I'm under a little grow light and I'm trying to be very careful. So I have 6 or 10 different kinds of tomatoes in that tray. The problem is if you have kids, They knock the little tag out, and then they knock two or three out, and then they don't know which one it went, and so then they put it back, and it comes up the wrong thing. And I've sold them as the wrong thing. So embarrassing. I grew tomato plants for a guy on an island. It's called Stehekin Island. You can only get there by plane or boat, or you can hike over the mountain. But anyway, he wanted two kinds. I grow them in a gallon pot. They're big plants when I'm done, because his climate is cold and he has a late start. They go, I pack them and put them on the ship. They go there. And 1 year they weren't the right plant. They weren't what he asked for. How awful is that? I mean, you can't repay him. Like, I could pay for the plants, but I couldn't, you know, he was a market gardener. It wasn't what he wanted. He got tomatoes. He sold tomatoes. It just wasn't what he had planned on. So that's really important to label. So I have gone to using painter's tape. Painter's tape doesn't come off, and also it sticks. And I have, I'll show you tomorrow when we're soil blocking, a pen that comes from Johnny's or from Amazon. It's a gardener's marking pen. It lasts forever. And when you write on anything, it will not fade. You can wash it and whatever, and it won't come off. And it's just perfect. I always used to use, the black markers, what do you call it? Sharpie. You ruin 10 Sharpies in a year. I mean, the minute they get wet, they're no good. But they do fade eventually. So, yeah, you can kind of see some of my labels were starting to fade. And if they've been there long enough, they just fade completely. But if you use the gardener's marker, it works great. I had a whole box of them. And I was going to bring them and let you each have one, and my suitcase was too small. I couldn't bring everything.
1 year I got some tomatoes from a neighbor of mine whose daughter was selling them. And she had printed the labels on waterproof paper. And I planted those next to the tomatoes. They went all summer and partway through the winter, and the print, it didn't fade. And so that's one of my goals. I'd actually like to print, because then I can actually have the picture and the description. So next year I know what I planted, on. And I think, did I put it in here? Oh, the TerraSlate waterproof laser printer paper is one that I found. So, okay. Yes. One more tip. If you should decide that you want to plant in trays, there's a couple of tips. You know, you can put the soil over the top and tap it a couple of times, and then you can add a little bit more if you need. And I just learned this trick this year, and it was like revolutionary, but don't put the water on the top of the trays. Set your tray into another tray with water or some kind of a basin.
A granola pan.
So the water, and it does take a little bit of time, but the water will diffuse up into the potting soil. So you can actually plant your seeds in the dry soil. Some of them, it's easier to work with dry soil and put them in than set them there to get the water going. And that works really well.
If you're soil blocking, your soil will have the right amount of moisture in it. If it's too dry, sometimes it can get staticky. So, okay, we're going to... When you go and buy a tray at the store, you'll see these humidity domes. They're okay. I use them sometimes, you know, pepper plants, they come up and they hold the seed on the top of the leaf, and it looks like they'll never get out because it's dry. But if it's got a humidity dome on there for a few hours, it'll soften the seed. However, you can really get into problems with fungus and molds if you have those humidity domes on too long. So we used plastic wrap, and these are flower seeds, and flower seeds are way harder to plant than vegetable seeds. But we put them on, and the minute they come up, you take it off, because it can get really warm, and you have to watch that you don't have it too hot. Like the sun, if it's direct on there, it'll cook your little plant. So that's why take it off right away. But I have found the perfect thing. And it is loose weave burlap. It's as wide as your tray, and you just roll it out over top. It keeps the moisture in, but it still breathes. So that's my newest, latest thing. I have used inverted trays, you know, just putting another tray on top or a microgreen tray or something. You can do that for most vegetables, but you can't do that for flowers, seeds that need light to germinate. If a seed needs light to germinate, you're planting it right on top of the soil. You're not covering it with soil. It needs the light, otherwise it won't crack. So inverting something dark over top doesn't work. Aha. We are going to talk about that. I want you to look at this. Okay. This is hers, but I just have to talk about it. Hers are too high. And so she was gone, and there was a lot of different factors as to why those plants got out of hand. But if she would have been home and she would have been watching and she would have had her lights low while they were small, they wouldn't have done that. But she wasn't there. The light was too high. They stretched up to the light, and now the stems are really thin, and they'll break in the wind, or you have to bury them so deep. So usually you dig a trench, you lay the long stem in the trench, and you just let the little top stick up, and it'll grow roots all along the side. So some people do that all the time. It's fine, but if you're wanting to, you know, practice the art of growing a tomato plant, you're going to have your light source close. Right. Physically close. So I have the these same shelves. I have the probably 8 of those. And my lights hang down just above the plants. And as they grow, I put the chain up a little higher. It has a little hook, and you just put the chain up. Now, that works if you're using lights T8s and T12s. If you're using T5s, they're hot, and they might burn your plants. And so then they want them high. You have to put them a little higher. So I prefer to use a T8 or a T12. She doesn't have any of that. These are LEDs, which is really nice. You can get LED grow lights. They use less electricity. They're less hot. And they work really well. But I was trying to figure out which ones to get if I have to replace my lights this year. And it's really, there's a lot of different lights out there, and it's kind of confusing. So you're wanting to research for a high quality light that gives a certain, I don't know if it's lumen or whatever. It's just something you're going to have to research, because I didn't have time to finish figuring that one out.
Yeah, these ones we actually got from Home Depot, and they were a grow light. And you can see they have red lights in there too, which helps the root development and all. So I have to say, this is my first, okay, so I've been starting seeds for probably 25 years. Usually in one tray, I'll plant all, because I had one grow mat, and I would plant all my tomatoes a little row. And when they sprouted, then I'd put the peppers on the grow mat. And so I just kind of economized that way and kept them all in the kitchen window. But as the spring would advance, the sun would get higher, and they would, you know, not get as much sun. Then I'm shuffling them outside and bringing them in the evening. So this shelf was just like, I was so excited, because it's the first time that we've had a shelf, and we invested in some of these grow mats. And I'll just briefly mention this. This has a probe. There's one for, you can run two grow mats off of this. Looks like a power bar. That's actually a controller, and you plug one mat into one section, and with the probe underneath your flat of plants, and the other one into the other. And these controllers will start, you can set them so they turn on at one temperature and turn off at another. It not only saves electricity, but it keeps your plants from getting too hot underneath, and also from burning up your mats, because they're just on all the time. And that was really a game changer too, because it's doing all that regulating for you.
Whitefly, yes, that's what they're called. Yeah, that usually is in my greenhouse at a certain season. And so they go away. As soon as the greenhouse is able to be opened up, they'll go away. It's not really too serious of a thing unless you get it in your house, and it's kind of yucky. But you can get those little yellow sticky things. Yeah, fly trap things. You just put them one in each tray or somewhere nearby. The other thing you can do, I researched this and then I don't remember the name of it. It's natural, but it's GN natural. It's got some spinosad in it. You put it in your water once a week. If you're having a problem with soil gnats or white fly, it just helps. Natural. GNATROL. Yeah. And you just put it in the water once a week and it'll kill whatever larva is in your soil. So then they won't keep producing. Yes. You can do it in the window. It's just you're having to pay a lot more attention. You're having to take them in and out, and it's fine. If you make yourself a little cold frame, then you can put them outside during the day with the lid down. If it's a cold day, you can open the lid if it's a hot day. It just takes a lot of thinking. So this takes a lot of that thinking away. I personally never had a grow mat before. I bought one this year. I've never had one. But I've always grown with the lights. And she just got the lights. So, you know, you start with what you have, but there's a lot of ways you can do it. You just want the plants to get enough light and enough warmth to grow healthy. So, and I don't know what time it is. Are we going over time? I think almost time. Okay, we just talked about, there you can see my grow lights are behind her. I couldn't find a picture. I don't know why, but they're really low on the hanging low. Anyway, here's a cold frame that I was talking about. 5 more minutes. Okay. Cold frame, that's her house because I don't have one of these. I have
different. So I put, when I can, put them out like this. That kind of actually helps. We'll talk about this, harden them off. But I also want to point out at the top there on the frame, there's two windows, so you can have one or the other open. There's an extender that attaches to the front wall. And you see that black rod there? That's a cylinder that's filled with beeswax. So these automatically will open when it hits 70 degrees or warmer. If it's a windy day, then I end up shutting them or leaving only one half open or something. But so they're self-regulated. It takes a little bit of the, did I forget to go open them before the sun hit it? You know, that kind of thing.
So I was talking about bottom watering. There is sometimes when you need to miss the tops. If the seeds are drier, the very tops are, if you water enough from the bottom, it shouldn't be a problem. And you should only need to do it once a day. However, every once in a while, you could mist them. In the greenhouse, I have a very fine mist on my hose, and I can spray them gently. If you overwater, you'll know it. Your plants will die. They have to have oxygen. Damping off happens very quickly, and once the tray starts to go, if you don't correct it real quick, you're going to lose the whole tray. Petting your plants, that's putting your hand over the leaves like this to mimic the wind. It makes them stronger. You can have a fan going if you want, but just doing that a couple times a day is all it needs. I actually touch them. I rub my hands gently over the leaves. It makes them a lot stronger. These are eggplant. This is a germination chamber that I made out of a cupboard. It has a crock pot full of water. I plug it in. I have a thermometer there to make sure the temperature is just right. I can get 26 trays in this germination chamber. If I plant cabbages in a tray and put it on the rack without the heater, 5, 6, 7 days later, you'll start to see little plants, right? If I put them in here, 24 hours later, I got to get them out. They are ready. You take your plants out when they are 50% germinated, meaning you can see little sprinkles of them trying to come up, but they're not quite, you're not seeing all of them yet. If you wait, it's dark in there. If you wait, they'll get leggy just within hours. So if the plant is got its little leaves still curled up, take it out. And if you leave it, it'll open up and it'll try to find the light. And it'll be skinny and it won't be strong. We do a lot of this. These are the tunnels from Farmer's Friend. I have two of them. But when it, you can see it's still snowing outside. So I have different ways of doing this. But this was the simplest one I could show you. I have bricks underneath, a little heater under there, a plastic over top. These are, what do you call these? No, the, not angle iron, no. Conduit. These are conduit that have been shaped with one of those benders. You can get a bender from Johnny's. I have one. Or you can use a more flexible PVC, but then you have to have something for it to slide into on the bottom. So that's one way we do our seeds when it's still cold. It's not cost effective if you're running a heater under there. Just gonna say, but we do it. damping off, we already talked about. So I think I'm just gonna let you finish.
So, you know, there's always a spiritual lesson, and that's one of the reasons I think the Lord wants us to garden is because he can bring things to our attention more vividly. And during seed germination, the growth of young seedlings and the maturing of the plants, we discover how easily they are injured from cold, heat, wind, rain, or snow, causing setbacks or permanent damage. What can we learn from this? Young plants cannot endure contrasting temperatures, so we, those of us that are parents, are reminded how our young children need tender, loving, patient care, watchful protection in infancy and childhood from the elements that would cause them setbacks and damage their innocence and wholesomeness. And our continued prayers, gentle guidance, and watchfulness mingled with love and warm friendship aid their youth. We may pray, as the psalmist David said, this is in Psalms 144, "Send thine hand from above, rid me and deliver me out of great waters. Rid me and deliver me from the hand of strange children, whose mouth speaketh vanity, and their right hand is a right hand of falsehood. That our sons may be as plants grown up in their youth, that our daughters may be as cornerstones polished after the similitude of a palace. That our garners may be full, affording all manner of store. That our sheep may bring forth thousands and ten thousands in our streets, that our oxen may be strong to labor, that there be no breaking in nor going out, that there be no complaining in our streets. Happy is that people that is in such a case. Yea, happy is that people whose God is the Lord." And this brings us back to the why, and that is, that our sons may be as plants grown up in their youth, and that our daughters may be as cornerstones polished after the similitude of a palace.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.